Broadcasting live.
It's America's longest running talk show on computers. It's Computer America, bringing you the biggest names in technology with guest interviews, new products, and your emails. Listen live at ComputerAmerica.com
on any device around the world.
Email the show at live@ComputerAmerica.com or find us on social media.
Be sure to check out our website for contests, giveaways, show notes, live video stream, podcasts, and more.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome everyone into the Computer America Show. We are the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers and technology. And everyone, hey, I hope that you've been having a great week. And of course, we had a couple great interviews. Definitely check those up on the site. And in the meantime, everyone, welcome into Friday. When we kind of record this, this is like the first thing that we do on a Friday. And it's a lot of fun because, we're going to let Ralph say it best, but these are always really good segments to lead you out onto the weekend. I believe that we do a much better job than most of the sites out there that, will either throw, just crazy advertisements, or they'll throw distracting, big, catchy news and headlines and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, our stories are catchy, but at the same time, they're also fun. So with that being said, everyone, ComputerAmerica.com, that's where you'll find everything, including the show notes, past shows, future shows, all of Ralph's segments, all of our other segments, social media links, contests, giveaways, and more. Everyone keep an eye on that website. We have some things coming up. Now, with that being said, why don't we go ahead and just jump right into today's program. So everyone, joining us on every single Friday is the one, the only, Mr. Ralph Bond. He is our science and technology trends correspondent, as well as a tech correspondent for WKEX over in Portland, Oregon, the Mark Mason Show. So Ralph, welcome back onto Computer America. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. And as you kind of alluded to, our job every Friday is to bubble up from the soup and sewer of horrible negative world news to provide our audience with some uplifting, inspiring, and encouraging science and technology news. So that's what we're here for today. You're going to walk away feeling better.
Absolutely. And let's face it, it's hard to compete with the likes of Elon Musk, because everyone pays attention to every single thing he does. And don't get me wrong, a lot of it is newsworthy, but we're here to bring you some news stories that maybe didn't grab as much. So Ralph, why don't we go ahead and give people the preamble and explain what our segment's about.
You bet. Well, first of all, it's great to be back. And this week, we're going to kick things off with a high-tech way to walk super fast. But before we get into that, for people who may be joining us for the first time, a little bit about what I do. So I'm an aggregator of science and tech news features I find by monitoring a host of online news outlets. And I look for important stories that don't usually capture mainstream press attention. And sometimes, as Ben all too well knows, they're kind of weird and quirky, some of them. I always look for news that gives a glimpse into where we're headed in robotics, medical technology, sustainable energy technology, transportation advances, space research, physics, you name it. And what I do with each news item is present the essential points and in a very digestible, condensed form. And I stress to our audience, please come out to ComputerAmerica.com. Check out the show notes that we provide for you, because they have pictures and links, because I guarantee you, if you're really, truly interested in a given topic we're going to cover today and you want to dig deeper into the science or technology underpinnings to the story, you need the links to go out and read the original articles. So, with that said, I think it's so amazing to me, the span and range of things that, because of the horrible news cycle we're in with all the disasters in the Ukraine and everything, these stories just fade off into the background. Yet what Ben and I try to do is bring them to the surface and share them with you in, again, an uplifting and upbeat way.
Absolutely. And of course, we have a couple of these. I want to really emphasize the video portion, because Ralph includes a lot of videos with these that, you get to see, not just hear what we're talking about. But for everyone out there listening strictly to the podcast, hey, don't worry, we have your back. Now, with that being said, Ralph, you've teased this to me for about a week and a half. Let's go ahead and tell everyone about, what did I say last week? Essentially, the next version of Heelys.
Yes, yes. So the headline here is artificial intelligence used to create the world's fastest shoes. Got this from PC Magazine. If you have the show notes and you're looking at the pictures and so forth, you can see what they look like. But here we go. An outfit based in Pittsburgh called Shift Robotics recently unveiled what it claims are the world's fastest shoes, which they call moonwalkers. And okay, so right off the top, to me, shoes is a misnomer. They're really roller skate-like devices you strap onto your shoes that enable you to walk at the speed of a run. And it reminds me of those children's plastic strap-on skates you can put on a regular pair of shoes. Excuse me. A little bit of a froggy in the throat this week, so I may have to clear my throat periodically. Anyway, so again, they do look like those strap-on skates, but moonwalkers, unlike strap-on skates, these guys are super high-tech. Moonwalkers use a combination of artificial intelligence and machine learning to help the user walk swiftly. And as their amazing video shows, which Ben is sharing with you right now, to walk faster, you just walk faster. To slow down, walk slower. To stop, you just stop walking. It's that simple. It's really uncanny. And again, the video really makes that apparent. A brushless DC motor distributes power across 8 plastic wheels, which react to the natural movement of each ankle to transition between shift or go and lock or stop modes. And what I think is interesting and distinguishes this product from the good old-fashioned strap-on skates, right, is here's the distinguishing feature. A front hinge on the moonwalker's skate-like body allows the foot to naturally bend or flex at the toes, preserving mobility and balance, while an electronic multi-layer brake protection system allows you to use stairs, elevators, and mass transit access, without fear of falling. Yeah.
And, you know, just as you're saying that, the video lined up perfectly. And so I had to kind of go back for everyone not really catching that. But, you know, a gentleman walks up to the bottom of the stairs and you can see him kind of with one toe kind of lean forward and activate that sensor. And then he just walks upstairs like normal, reactivates him, after, and then he keeps going.
I know. I love it. I just love it. I mean, it's just, we're going to talk a little bit later about why I don't think this is a toy, but jumping ahead of myself. But this is where, if you think about even just this, an electronic multi-layer brake protection system, there's where your AI and incredible programming is coming into play, right? Yeah. Anyway, Shift Robotics team claims you can learn to use the moonwalkers after about 10 steps. So strap them on, take a few steps, boom. I would love to try these out. Mm-hmm. And Ben, as I said before we went on air, these guys could be great guests to dig in deeper with this. Now, if you want a pair of these amazing skate-like shoes or skate-like devices, you're going to have to wait until March 2023. So these are still in development. So we're giving you a sneak peek, right? And the price will be $1,099. And I hope I said at the outset that I picked this story up from PC Magazine. I think I did, because I always like to make sure people know I don't write this material originally. I look at articles and then I glean the essential points and put them in the show notes. And one thing I didn't think about until just now, I did not see in the article anything saying, okay, if you know, when you get these things someday, you plug them in, it's going to take X amount of time for them to charge up. And your estimated time of usage is what? 3 hours, 2 hours, 1 hour? What is it before you have to recharge these things? So that part was not in the story that I could find offhand unless I just glossed over it. But that would be something
capacity.
I'd want to know about this. And then now the last point, and Ben, I'd really like your input here as well, of course. My take on this is not just a gimmicky toy. Imagine how it could help, for example, and I've got a list of things that I think where this could help in a very serious way. First and foremost, people who might have walking disability challenges. Wow. All of a sudden, just bell goes off in my head. Or how about a factory or loading dock workers who need to move quickly from an area, from one area to another? How about the good old fashioned postal, daughter and son-in-law live in an older neighborhood, right, in Portland, Oregon, where the postal, it's a woman, the postal worker literally still has the old giant postal bag satchel over the shoulder and is walking, the satchel, and walking from house to house to house to house to house, right? the old school thing is it's a very narrow street, being very, very old part of town. The street's not very wide and so forth and so on. So postal walkers, imagine how this could speed up their delivery. One postal walker could suddenly maybe cover much more territory if they had these. Again, if the range of these skates is good in terms of power. Or how about nurses in hospitals that need to move quickly on foot from one area to another in a level, say like in an ER or something like that. And to me, endless real world possibilities. Ben, I don't know, maybe you've been thinking of some other reasons why this is not just a toy.
Well, yeah. And of course, and I was also reading some of the FAQ, but I mean, this is definitely not just a toy because let's face it, there's, you know, so many cases just need to get from point A to point B for, you know, so much faster. I mean, what this kind of reminded me of, Ralph, real quick, was just at airports, you know, they have the moving kind of sidewalks to walk, you know, to walk people.
Yeah,
it seems
right.
to mirror almost that level of speed, you know, where you're going to be walking, you know, much faster than just normal.
Right.
But I mean, like you said, just anyone who's on their feet has to get from, you know, point A to point B. I know that, you know, like security officers and teachers and so on and so forth. I remember one time in high school, our vice principal who walked around, you know, who walked the campus all day, said that he would get about 10 to 12 miles a day just walking the campus. So, you know, just anyone who has to get from point, you know, I'm sure that you mentioned here, warehouse workers, you know, like Amazon warehouse workers, I'm sure Amazon would be interested in stuff like this. I mean, so many use cases. It does depend. And I was poking around there, you know, all of their material trying to find how, you know, the range and stuff like that. Could not find the range anywhere, which is very, very strange. I'm sure that maybe, you know, just given the form factor, Ralph, and just the size of it, I'm betting maybe half an hour, if I had to take an educated guess. So it's not for, you know, maybe a commute, you know, walking down the sidewalk, 15 minute commute, either way, shorten that, all well and good. But one thing I have to say, I was looking at their promotional video, and this is just, you know, kind of a personal thing here. This scene as well for who, you know, and also the fact that it can go uphill, pretty cool as well. Yeah. But let's see, I think it was, let's see, where was it? It was somewhere around this mark where someone's walking a dog across a suspension bridge right here. Ralph, I wish I'd gotten in touch with him sooner because, you know, there are these two scenes right here. This is actually falls on the Reedy in Greenville, South Carolina. I actually used to live very, very close to here.
How cool.
And you know, it's pretty close to Asheville where I'm based out of. I could have met them down there. I could have been like, yeah, you know, let me come down. Let me try them out. Let me, So it's, so I wish I had been down there, but still, I was checking out some other material and then we'll move on to the next story. They said, Ralph, that it handles cracked pavement perfectly well. I'm sure people are like, what happens if it's really, really bad pavement? They tested on that. They can walk on gravel roads. So, you know, gravel is no trouble for this. They've really thought this out.
It's a remarkable thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and the fact that it fits so many different kinds of shoes and it just straps on, very, very cool. So I'll definitely try to get in touch with these guys because they seem to have, Ralph, what's old is new again. Just like you said, strap-on skates from the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s. we're right back there. So it looks like a lot of fun, also regardless. You know, very, very natural, just kind of walking pattern, but the fact that you get to go faster than everyone, they actually do look like a lot of fun. So,
and Ben, talking about strap-on skates, I can't resist. I'm so old.
What is that?
I remember my first pair of strap-on skates were heavy metal. The wheels were metal. Mm-hmm. The platened or foot part was solid metal. Red. And it was, you know, it was horrible. But I mean, that's how old I am. And we're talking about the very, very late 1950s when I was, I don't know, like 7 or 8 or something like that. You do the math. I'm an old guy.
When I was younger, you know, instead of getting into skateboarding, we got into inline rollerblading. And and like the first time in the 90s when it got popular. So I assume the first time, maybe it got popular before.
Not to take up more time, but I have to tell you, when you said skateboarding, let me tell you what the first skateboards were.
Oh, they were
people
tiny.
People took those. They took those strap-on metal skates I was just telling you about, took them apart, and took a piece of wood and nailed the two, ends, and of one skate. They destroyed one skate, nailed it on the boards, and that's the genesis of skateboarding. That's how old I am. We did it as kids, and I remember doing it in Southern California.
I had no idea. So there you go. A little fun fact and a little trip down memory lane. And don't worry, folks. We did it fast because we were talking about moonwalkers. Yes, that was story number one. You can find out more. And again, $1,100. I mean, Ralph, if you needed another reason why this isn't a toy, pretty steep price, but it might have some use cases.
And one more thing. If it has an interchangeable battery, say you're working in an ER, and maybe it only has 30, 40 minutes range. But if you had a bank of these batteries all charging and stuff, and you walk up and just slip on the battery, slip it off, whatever, that kind of thing, maybe that would help overcome that range problem. Definitely. TBD. Need to talk to these guys and see what they're really up to.
Definitely. So there you go. Story number one. Story number two.
Yes.
And this one is, because Ralph is not just our technology trends, but also our science trends. Definitely falls in that one. And story number two is... this is about as strange as they come. So let's go and talk about microplastics.
Yes. And before I even give the headline, think to yourself this. What led these people to think, let's try this? What would happen? So with that little tease, the headline here, egg whites, just regular old eggs like you have probably in your refrigerator, egg whites could help remove microplastics from seawater and more. Got this from Engadget.com. Great story. So microplastics, just to remind you, are tiny fragments less than 5 millimeters that cause pollution in our lakes, rivers, and of course our oceans. And it's a terrible problem. And we've talked in previous shows about different ideas and ways for people to try to corral this problem, capture these materials, get them out of the water. But this is the latest thing I came across. So Princeton University researchers have discovered egg whites can be used to create a lightweight, porous aerogel that can remove microplastics and salt from seawater. Ding, ding, ding. That ought to raise your attention, antenna. Okay, here we go. Now, here's the really weird part, right? I mean, again, what made somebody think, what would happen if we did this to egg whites? Here we go. When you freeze dry and superheat egg whites up to 1,652 degrees Fahrenheit in an oxygen-free environment, their pure protein system produces a mix of carbon fiber strands and graphene sheets that can remove 99% of tiny plastics from water and 98% of the salt.
So I'm sure I'm not the only one that has microwaved eggs before. Ralph, how long in the microwave do you have to put your egg whites to get them up to 1,700 degrees Fahrenheit?
Well,
is that like 15 minutes?
Yeah, well, I can't speak to that. I have one of these, do-it-yourself, super simple omelet, plasticky tray things, and I put like a scrambled egg mix in. All I have to do is zap it for about a minute and 10 seconds, and it's all cooked. So taking this stuff, again, they're freeze drying these egg whites, then superheating them to 1,652 degrees. No, it's got to be 1,652, not 1,650. I'm kidding. But anyway, again, the profound thing that this creates graphene sheets that can remove 99% of tiny plastics from water and 98% of the salt. Talk about an incredible win-win scenario. Yeah. Desalination plus removal of plastics. Wow.
Definitely.
So as the article points out, as you might imagine, a readily available organic material like this has its benefits. It's cheap to make and needs only gravity to work. And that part I don't quite fully understand. You'd have to dig deeper into the article or talk to these guys. It won't consume energy or excess water. Activated carbon is cheap, but it's not nearly as effective as the egg white gel. And while eggs from the grocery store prompted the breakthrough, you can use other proteins that won't cut into the population's food supply. And I'd like to know, what are those other proteins, right?
Ralph, it sounds like, well, first of all, the other protein, just anything with a carbon-based, because we're carbon-based people and chickens are carbon-based chickens.
Right.
Anything with carbon. So you could have protein, I'm sure, from soy, soy plants or things like that.
Well, that's, yeah.
So yeah, the only thing I wanted to kind of touch on, Ralph, was only needs gravity to work. I'm assuming that it creates, you know, sheets and filters. So those are usually gravity fed. You know,
I see your point. So you pass it through like a filtration system. That makes sense. Cool. And then the Princeton team stresses, however, in a reality check, that before their egg white based aerogel is ready for widespread use, they need to refine the manufacturing process to make mass production possible. But Ben, of course, if they succeed, it would make it potentially or comparatively easy to remove microplastics and purify ocean water. And a key question not addressed in the article, and in fact, my friend and colleague Mark Mason at KEX Radio in Portland and I were talking about this. How would you deploy the egg white based filter solution? And you just gave a clue. Maybe it's in a contained unit of some kind. Right. But how do you do this on a massive scale to really truly impact the huge, massive problem in our oceans of these microplastics? So that's a little bit TBD. But the article ends by noting, there are other purposes for that matter. The gel might also be useful for energy storage. What? And insulation. And it kind of jokingly says at the end, don't be surprised if one day you find egg-like proteins in your walls. That part was a really tantalizing tease at the end. Mm-hmm. I would love to know more about that. But what did who sat around? Mark Mason, my colleague and host of the Mark Mason Show on KEX, he always says something, Ralph, how many beers did these guys have before someone said, hey, what if we freeze dry some egg whites and superheat them to 1652 degrees? What would happen?
You know, chemists are on a different level, and knowing it's Princeton, probably a few beers. But I will say that chemists see things as like their basic components, and they see egg whites as just a ready source of carbon, you know, carbon material, and they broke it down. I will say that to a couple things, first one, Ralph, it's like, how do you get this out into the ocean and start cleaning up the microplastics that we're all dealing with? It may seem like a very self-centered, kind of selfish looking way, but really, Ralph, you know, we humans only really care about the water that we're pulling out for drinking and things like that. Yeah. So, first we start off there. Second, we can go back to many, many, many weeks and months of this program, and I think we did this one about 8 or 9 months ago, Ralph, where you had drones, essentially self-piloting, self-powered by the motions of the waves, and it would actually filter and catch plastics all by itself, and then, you know, you could go out and pick them up and, you know, redo the filters, something like that, you know, maybe swarms of drones on top of the ocean just sucking up water and filtering it, and then you kind of do that thing. There are ways.
Oh, absolutely, Ben. And another story you did a few months ago, I don't know how long ago it was, in Holland. Remember the guys who put these lines of bubble tubes on the bottom of the rivers?
Yes.
And the bubbles, curtains of bubbles would bubble up the plastic waste so you could capture the plastic waste before it becomes microplastic, right? Mm-hmm. In their rivers before it gets out to the ocean. So there are many brilliant people around the world saying we've got to figure out a way to clean our waters or to prevent these plastics from becoming microplastics in the greater ocean bodies of water on our planet. So, interesting.
As always, step number one, admitting there's a problem. And I think we've done that. Yes. So now we are coming up with solutions. As to the temperature and the freeze drying and all this kind of thing, it's unfortunate that, as always, graphene and, you know, nanofiber, you know, what have you, carbon fiber strands and graphene sheets. Mm-hmm, graphene is so incredible, Ralph. That's a material we've been talking about for 10, 15 years.
Years. Yeah.
And it's amazing that they're able to turn egg whites into graphene sheets. I mean, hopefully that's, cheaper and easier. But still, I'm sure that the energy needed to get it up to 1600 degrees makes it also a little bit challenging. But hey, alternative materials are always helpful. So good job to the Princeton team. And very, very incredible they're able to do that with egg whites. So story number two.
Hey, Ben, I've got one more thought on this. We were kind of half joking about who sat around thinking, what if you did this to egg whites? Maybe it wasn't a who, but a what, meaning a supercomputer with maybe some kind of AI or something with all the properties of different natural things. And it went through an algorithm that said, you know, I want this at the end. What combination of things could do this? And what, you know, even including temperature process, maybe there was some incredible computer program that sifted through gazillions of data points to say, ding, 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 guess what? Egg whites.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe.
It's something very, very common and, you know, kind of readily available. It
right.
could be all, you know, all the different supercomputers we've been talking about for a while.
Yeah,
and by the way,
exactly.
again, that kind of teased at the end about the gel might be useful for energy storage and insulation. So don't be surprised
yeah.
if you find it in your walls. I'm sure
yeah.
there they mean that it's also a good insulator. So,
yes,
very,
isn't
very
that something.
Yeah.
Love it.
Lots
Love
of
it.
Applications. Story number two. Story number three. Let's go ahead
yeah.
and talk about this one, because our smartphones are, and this is really, don't get me wrong, photographers kind of complain about this all day, and we have also kind of mm-hmm. asked people, photography isn't as valuable of a profession. You know, back in the day, you could be a photographer because you bought the $2,000 Canon or Fujitsu camera, and you know, you learned how to work it. You learned all the little things.
Right. Yes.
Ralph, in our pocket is one of the most powerful cameras you can have, you know, in a flagship smartphone. That's done, you know, kind of bad things for like the art world and stuff like that, but it's done great things for medical and everyday photography, videography.
Absolutely.
It's really done amazing things. So story number three, really, I wanted to emphasize that, you know, what you take cat pictures on all day is also helping medical science. So
absolutely, absolutely. And I love this. This I picked up from the Intel newsroom as one of their press announcements recently. And as some of your listeners know, I worked for Intel for many years. That's how I got to know you and your dad mm-hmm. and so forth. Anyway, headline here is physical therapy patients will soon be able to use smartphones to watch 3D immersive exercise videos. And this is a story that really resonated with me personally, because unfortunately, many times in my life, and not even that long ago, a couple months ago, I had this weird muscle thing happen to me on the left side of my left leg. And what it turned out to be after they examined me, they said, you have this muscle sprain that's putting pressure on your sciatic nerve.
Hmm.
And that sciatic nerve was just causing me terrible pain. I mean, at first I thought based on the symptoms, it was maybe, you know, cancer or something horrible. And then the doctor said, no, it's pretty simple, but I need you to do the following exercises for several weeks to get this muscle to relax and take the pressure off the sciatic nerve. So friends, Mr. Physical Therapy here, who's also had his shoulder dislocated four times and had two operations and has had a lot of physical therapy there, blah, 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 blah.
Ralph is more machine than man at this point, is what he's trying to say.
I wish. Anyway, this is why this resonated with me. It's really, if you're a person who's gone through physical therapy, or if you are a physical therapist, please, please, this story is very, very cool. But now let's get into it. So, of course, as I alluded to, I've been a physical therapy patient many times, and most of the time, and even most recently, I came home with paper printouts with little diagrams showing me how to do the prescribed exercises, and sometimes I get links to a simple demonstration video online, and by simple, I mean just a single view, traditional video, mm-hmm. right? And of course, any physical therapy patient will relate to this. I try my best to remember the moves and positions I was taught the way I'm supposed to do them, but you get home and you go, do I put my leg kind of like that? Or so, you know, anyway.
Yeah, it's hard to remember.
So here in Oregon, this is a little bit of an Oregon-centric story where I live. So the Providence Health and Services team here in Portland, Oregon, realized patients need a much better solution, a much better take-home or on-the-go solution, right? So right now, they're working to create immersive 3D videos that physical therapy patients can watch on their smartphones. And these remarkable videos will allow you to use touchscreen controls to move around the demonstrator so you can see the correct way to execute an exercise from any angle or any movement that you want to do, like the person who's using the walker. The new physical therapy exercise videos are being produced on a small stage at the Providence Office Park in Portland, Oregon, where here's the interesting technology part and where Intel comes in, okay? How are they doing this? They're using 20 Intel depth sensing cameras that capture 360-degree action in what is called volumetric capture. And that's, you know, should look somewhat familiar. You're showing in the video right now. A little more about these Intel RealSense depth cameras. D as in dog, 435. Okay. And this is something people go, Intel, I thought they just did brain chips. What are you talking about here? No. Intel's got a very broad net of technology. So folks, please don't think that Intel's just microprocessors. Okay. So the Intel RealSense, depth camera model D435 is a stereo solution offering quality depth for a variety of applications. Its wide field of view is perfect for applications such as robotics or augmented and virtual reality, where seeing as much of the scene as possible is vitally important. And with a range of up to 10 meters, this small form factor camera can be integrated into any solution with ease and comes complete with our Intel RealSense SDK 2.0 and cross-platform support. And in the show notes, folks, again, come and get the show notes. I've got a picture of this camera. It's really, really cool. And in the pictures in the show notes showing the studio for the Providence people, you can see these pedestals, poles, if you will, where all these cameras are, the 20 cameras are arrayed around the little mini stage where the exercise expert demonstrates what you're supposed to do. So picking up here, the digital footage from each camera is sent to a computer powered by an Intel Xeon processor that, of course, converts billions of pixels into a 3D immersive virtual environment that can be manipulated by the viewer to see from nearly any angle. And an added benefit is that these videos can be shared among patients at the healthcare system's 51 hospitals. So Providence has 51 hospitals, and the idea is that this material could be shared with all the physical therapy technicians and so forth, and patients and so on. Providence built the original studio in 2021 using funding from the Intel Pandemic Response Technology Initiative, another reason why this is an Intel story, and new funding this year from Intel is supporting the Providence team's current work with the Grandsted Group. And I looked these guys up and they're really interesting too. These folks are experts in augmented and virtual reality, and they're teaming up to create the ultimate final thing, which will be an innovative smartphone app with a library of exercises. So by automating patient learning with immersive 3D smartphone-based video experiences, Providence expects to lower costs, deliver better caregiver experiences, meaning the physical therapist, this is good for them, and improve, of course, patient health outcomes. I just love this collaboration between medical and Intel technology and bringing in these VR and AR experts to putting this collaboration together is what I'm trying to say. I just think this is so important and so cool.
Yeah. And you know, we just watched a pretty in-depth video that showed a lot of examples and things like that. Ralph, like the technology, there's probably better stuff with motion capture and little ping pong balls on suits and things. But the thing that I liked about this was that Providence built this little studio. They have the cameras. And honestly, they can pull any one of their technicians and record anything, anytime, you know, that they want and have it just go. You know, it's not, this technology isn't going to revolutionize, the next Marvel movie, but it's going to be quick, easy and help people, you don't need a Hollywood production for simple exercises for, kind of rehab and things like that. This is amazing. The only thing that I'm kind of curious about, and, there are still lots of people, there's still an age gap when it comes to technology. I'm hoping that more and more people, especially that are older and who may need more of this kind of therapy. I hope that they make this super easy to use and super easy to access, because it looks very helpful. Like you said, instead of the paper handouts that aren't fully explanatory, maybe be able to do this with, for elderly people to be able to do this much more simple and see the video. I hope that it's very accessible.
And the video shows how you have the smartphone, you have the video, and you just take your two fingers and you can just manipulate this thing. So it's pretty intuitive.
For anyone who has used Snapchat, and has those little dancing figures and little cartoon characters and things like that, and you place it on any surface, they had this lady on a windowsill, for instance, doing her, doing the exercise. So it's very, very similar to Snapchat. Makes a lot of sense. Ralph, if I hope this technology translates to anything, personally, I've put together a lot of furniture over the past year or so. I hope IKEA picks up this idea and they can give me a 3D building of one of their cabinets.
That's
because
genius.
Oh my God,
that's genius.
That's tough. That's tough.
Brilliant. That's we should send this to IKEA and say, guys, you can check this out. Hey, one other thought. In fact, I think my friend Mark brought this up the other day. This could be great. Imagine you're a patient, and in our case, in Eastern Oregon is very remote, small, tiny rural communities. You're, you know, hundreds of miles from the big metro hospitals and all this good stuff. You need physical therapy. Your little local general purpose doctor connects you with a physical therapist. You could have total online thing, and the doctor could say, I want you to look at this video. I'm going to send this video. You can get this on your smartphone. Let me talk you through this. This is the exercise I want you to do. And you've got this 3D totally, you can move around any angle you want.
Right.
And I want you to do this exercise twice a day for the next 2 weeks or something. But so again, for remote situations, how wonderful is that? I love technology.
That's a trend that we're definitely seeing and sped up during the pandemic, which is just remote healthcare. You know, you don't have to go into the hospital to get good physical therapy. You can do it at home or, you know, or remote hospitals. Very, very important as well. So great comment from Mark. And let's go ahead and skip on over to story number four.
Yes.
And this one is very, very cool because, you know, imaging and, you know, just making things as non-invasive and just healthcare more. I guess, Ralph, today's theme might be like efficiency, because this makes, you know, a very, very annoying and potentially very dangerous part of, you know, of surgery, maybe, you know, minimally invasive. So story number four, and this might come as news to a lot of people, because honestly, I can't think of a single person. I know that in my family, I've known like a dozen women that have had breast cancer.
Yes.
I'm sure everyone out there knows someone who's been affected by this awful disease. This may provide some relief to those people.
Yes, yes. And this one is, it does offer a lot of hope. And my poor mother, who passed away at age 61, and I'm so old now, 61 seems young to me. But anyway, it's sad. But her journey with cancer started with breast cancer, and one thing led to another, and it got into her lymph nodes, and that was it. But with that downer little nugget, let's get positive. So here's the headline. Tiny endo, E-N-D-O, endomicroscope, will explain this, can spot breast cancer cells forming. So this is going to help with preventative, getting ahead of the cancer in breasts, okay? And I got this from the United Kingdom's Guardian, which is a great outlet, by the way. So here we go. Researchers at the Imperial College London have developed an endomicroscope that is less than 1 millimeter in diameter. And to give you some scale, if you took 25 of your hairs, plucked them out of your head, I can't do that because I don't have many of those hairs left. But if you put 25 of them together, that would be about the width of this microscope. And it's a microscope, okay? It's not just a scope or a video camera, okay? And time out, definition of endomicroscope. Well, endo means internal or within. An endomicroscope is a microscope version of an endoscope, which you might be aware of. An endoscope is just that. It's meant to be used internally, like in a colonoscopy, and it just gives you a video image. It's not a microscope, though. So we're talking about, let's imagine you take the lovely tool that's used for a colonoscopy, but made it a microscope, not just an image thing, but a microscope. So these devices are usually illuminated with fiber optics, flexible or rigid tubular instrument for visualizing the interior of a hollow organ or part, such as a bladder or esophagus, for diagnostic and therapeutic purposes, that typically has one or more channels to enable passage of instruments through, such as forceps or scissors. So again, if you look at the picture, we're talking about a thing that's a close cousin to an endoscope, but the profound thing, it's a microscope. So keep that in mind as we go forward here. And by the way, the image in the show notes shows this little guy up against a British penny. I guess a British penny is about the size of our pennies. I don't know. But anyway, give you an idea of the size. So the tiny microscope is attached to a very small and flexible tube designed to be inserted into the body, making it possible to be maneuvered through small spaces during surgery or during diagnostics. The microscope can produce high-resolution images from inside the target tissue to be examined and or treated. And here's where that relates to breast cancer. The hope is it could be used to speed up breast cancer treatment by helping surgeons identify cancerous cells as small as a hundredth of a millimeter in size at a much faster rate than traditional methods. So again, it's getting down to a tiny level that allows the surgeon to spot, identify, and remove these little guys before they become a bigger problem, right? And it would help reduce the need for follow-up operations to remove cancerous cells that previously evaded detection. So a classic scenario is you have breast cancer surgery, and the doctor says, oh, well, we feel pretty good that we think we got it all out. And then ding, 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 X number of time goes by, and it's come back because they couldn't see the tiny little remnants. And so the idea is this little micro endoscope could help with that. And the new microscope would also help with breast conserving surgery, where the surgeon removes the cancer while leaving as much of the normal breast tissue behind as possible. So there are multiple layers of goodness about this for our people who are impacted by breast cancer challenges. So I love the end of story or end the segment here with this very upbeat medical technology news.
Yeah, and hopefully it's a way to get more immediate, quick information. And
yes,
the entire time I was trying to find when the first video of a cell splitting kind of came out, and I'm sure that was as far as I can tell, 20, 30 years ago, we probably got our first video through a microscope of a cell splitting, but it just amazed me that, quite possibly in 20, 30 years, we went from, the first video of a cell to now being able to put a full-blown microscope and camera and record your cells splitting in your body in real time.
Wild.
It's really, really incredible. So this is perfect. And everyone, we'll have the show notes up by the time you hear this. Ralph, I want to thank you, as always, for coming on the program and sharing these stories with us. Everyone, we'll be back. I know everyone, have a happy Thanksgiving. I hope you have a great one. We'll be back next Friday with stories just after Thanksgiving. So everyone, have a great day. Thank you so much. Bye-bye, everyone.